Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you from the Rocky Mountain town of Crested Butte, Colorado. I am your host, Mark Troutman, CFP. This educational, personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. As I was thinking about what to talk about on this week's episode, what came to mind were some of the conversations I had with others at Camp 5 Mid-Atlantic 2 weekends ago, and also what emanated from the live podcast that was released last week. And I wanted to talk about what I like to think of as the three phases of financial freedom. And those three phases are what I like to term financial enlightenment, financial liberation, and then financial independence itself. In phase one, financial enlightenment, I like to think of it as when people become aware of their finances. They're listening to podcasts like this one, they're reading books, maybe blogs, and they're learning these new concepts. And so instead of just walking through life like many Americans, where they earn a paycheck and they just spend on whatever they choose, and in many cases are convinced to spend money from advertisements or whatever neighbors have, or people that become enlightened from a financial perspective, start to learn about their finances in more detail, start to view them differently, and decide truly where they want to go moving forward with their financial lives. We've talked about quite a number of these on the podcast. So I think the first thing is you're listening to podcasts, reading books, and learning these concepts. And then you start to put pen to paper and start looking at your own situation. So you're getting your financial house in order. You might be starting to track your expenses, like we discussed in episode number 4. You hopefully are calculating your net worth, at least annually and maybe more periodically, like quarterly. We talked about how to do that in episode 3. You may have some high interest debts that you realize that you want to pay off and pay down and get rid of. We talked about that very recently in episode 13, how to pay off your high interest debts, slaying the debt dragon. In many cases, when you're reading these books and blogs, you get turned on to the wonder of compounding, which we discussed in episode 11. And then you start putting your financial house in order by saving and investing, for example, creating an emergency fund, starting to fund that. You look at your employer retirement plans, for example. They might be 401ks. Typically, that's what you will have in an employer. You may fund an IRA, whether it's a traditional IRA or Roth IRA on your own. You may have access to a health savings account if you have a insurance policy through your employer in many cases that is HSA eligible or health savings account eligible. We talked about that recently. You may be funding brokerage accounts, for example. And we talked about a lot of this in episode 7, which was the financial order of operations. So you're starting to get everything in order. You're putting things to work. You are making steps forward. And like I said, I like to think of this as kind of when people get enlightenment when it comes to financial freedom. And I would encourage you to go back to some of the other episodes that I mentioned if you are new to this. And if you are new to this financial independence concept, I would say by just listening to this podcast and others, you are in the financial enlightenment phase. So that's kind of step one, just figuring out where you are and getting things in order and moving forward. The next phase I like to think of as kind of the implementation phase. You've figured out all the basics. You've got a game plan, and you're going to be moving forward with the things that you've learned. And I like to think of it as financial liberation, or really the core part of becoming financially free. And one of the first things that is liberating to many people is when they have fully funded their emergency account, for example, And we talked about 3 to 6 months of your base living expenses would be a good target for that emergency fund. That gives you a lot of comfort, some freedom, and you're not, certainly not living paycheck to paycheck at that point. Likely you have also, hopefully, automated a lot of the saving and investing. Maybe you are automating your contribution to your emergency account if it's not fully funded yet. You're automating your contributions to your employer 401k plan or retirement plan. If you are funding a Roth IRA or traditional IRA, maybe you've set up monthly or quarterly or biweekly contributions to those. If you have a health savings account, you're doing the same through payroll because, as I mentioned in a previous episode, you get a deduction for the contribution, but you also are not paying FICA, which is Medicare and Social Security tax on those contributions. And if you have a brokerage account, maybe you've automated that as well. And then that brings you to kind of another phase of this. And J.L. Collins in the books, The Simple Path to Wealth, talks about the concept of FU money. And I'll let you decide what that stands for, but it could be forget you money. And there are other terms for that as well. So let's just call it FU money. But basically, it is an account of assets, whether it's in a brokerage account or maybe a specified savings account, a high-yield savings account, for example, where it's giving you a little bit of buffer. This would be beyond your emergency fund, for example, but it gives you the ability to maybe step away from work that's not working out for you or is causing you a lot of angst. Or like we talked on the last episode with Samantha and Chris and Keith as well, about taking a sabbatical or a year off or a break from work to enjoy life. And that is another way you could use this FU money account, for example. Some people look at it as this account where you can walk away from work because maybe things at work aren't going well, but it could also be viewed as an ability to take a sabbatical away from work or time away from work to kind of clear your mind and so forth. And a lot of people will call this period of time, which is after you've kind of figured things out, how things work, you've set things in motion, maybe your goal is financial independence. And in the conversations I've had in the community recently, we've talked a lot about in the earlier years of the FIRE community, that's financial independence, retire early, there was a big focus on getting to this financial independence number. And we'll talk about what that number, how you calculate that number a little later in the episode. But getting to this point of financial independence where you do not have to work for money anymore and retiring. And I would say in the past, oh, certainly half decade, the concept of the RE or retire early has kind of been put to the side and financial independence is more the goal. But even so, I would say worrying about rushing to this point of financial independence and maybe depriving yourself in the meantime is not really the greatest goal because it requires potentially deprivation in the meantime, and that could take a number of years. And some people refer to this as the boring middle or the mucky middle. And to me, that kind of implies that it's a period of time where life isn't great, you're just putting money away, and you're waiting for this la-la land at the end of the rainbow, I guess you would say. And having gotten there, I can tell you that it doesn't really exist. You're probably not going to be any happier by getting to the financial independence number. I think it's a nice goal, but I don't think it should be the all-encompassing goal. And it was interesting because at CAMFI, I was not in this breakout session. So they have breakout sessions in the afternoons typically, and you have a number of options to choose from. And one of them was called the boring middle. And I wish I had gone to that one. I was involved in another one. And a number of people who went there, and this is, you know, secondhand, I heard this from other participants, but a number of people who went there, A, didn't really even know what the boring middle was because they were new to this. And I also understand a lot of people said, we need to rename this because why does it have to be boring? And I agree. I think this phase, the financial liberation phase, which many people refer to as the phase after you figure stuff out, but before financial independence, doesn't have to be boring or mucky. This can actually be the best phase of financial freedom because you've created an environment where you're not tied to a paycheck because you're not living paycheck to paycheck anymore. You hopefully have at least made good progress on your emergency fund. Maybe you have an FU money account or sabbatical fund already put aside. And this can be the exciting part of financial freedom. I encourage you to come up with a better name. Feel free to email me, mark@marksmoneymind.com. And if I get some good suggestions, I'll share them on the podcast because we need to come up with a better name for that. I also think it's beneficial during this time frame to find people that you can associate with that maybe are walking a similar path to you. In episode 5, I talked about finding your tribe, which I would argue people that attend things like Camfi, Economy, FinTalks, FinTalks Cruise, Phi Freedom Retreat in Bali, all of those are the tribe that I've found, and people that are involved in, you know, trying to achieve financial independence certainly can benefit from that group, I think. And it's interesting because I talk to a lot of people that, like their first Camfis, for example, many people come away that it's very life-changing and it's not a cult. We're not selling anything. I'm sure people who go there, their friends are probably like, oh, you're going to go to this cult thing. It's not a cult. But it is a group of people who have like interests. And what's interesting is, yes, financial freedom is a common interest. But as a result, many people find that they have a lot of other common interests as well. And I've heard time and time again how many people come away from that event just saying, I found my people, I found my tribe. And I would agree. That was my experience as well. So I think during this financial liberation period, which will likely be a long time. You know, once you put pen to paper and decide your financial independence number, and we'll talk about what that is in a little bit, so hang in there. It may take a while to get there. And I'm talking 10 years, 15 years. So this is a long period of time not to waste your life trying to get to this, you know, certain point in time, this financial independence number, for example. And I like to think of it as choosing to live a life of balance on your journey to financial independence. And you can do that in various ways. So that's really what I like talking about when I talk to people. We're actually going to, I think probably the next episode after this one, I'll release another conversation I had with a participant at Camfi that we recorded. And it was a very interesting conversation. So look for that. But I really like to talk to people about kind of figuring out how you can strive towards this goal of financial freedom and financial independence, but also live a wonderful life. And that's kind of what we were talking about in the live podcast as well. I mean, Samantha and Chris went on these sabbaticals that were life-changing, and they did that because they mentioned being Coastfi. And I would like to talk a little bit about that. I have been very interested in this kind of concept of Coastfi, SlowFi, that was not really discussed in the earlier years, but is really starting to become a focal topic in the community more recently. And I think it's a very good evolution of the FIRE community. And I don't even like to use FIRE. I like to just say FI community. So financial independence, get rid of the RE piece. Coastfi and SlowFi. Some people get these terms kind of confused or mixed up. And frankly, I didn't know the answer to these either. And when we talked about it on the podcast last week, the one that was released last week, Samantha was very good in explaining what the difference is. But I went to the website that the Fineers have, and I'll put the link in the show notes. But they are known for being Coastfi, SlowFi aficionados, I guess you would say. And in one of the posts that I will link to, they gave a definition of the two. So I'm going to read verbatim what they say Coastfi and SloFi are. And here it is. Coastfi means that you already have enough saved and invested for your traditional retirement. The calculation is based on your age, desired retirement age, and expected expenses. When you invest this money in the market for the long term, it will grow to provide you with what you need for a comfortable, traditional retirement. That means that each person will have a specific Coastfi number, which is the amount of money you'd need to have invested at your particular age. And there are calculators, and they have one on their website, but there are also, I'll link to just a standard time value of money calculator that's on the internet. I think it's calculator.net, but I'll put the link in the show note. And you can basically put in the number of years to retirement, how much money you have today, for example, and what it will grow to using a stated rate of return. And for rates of return, I like to use kind of an inflation-adjusted rate of return. So you're looking at everything in today dollars. In other words, if you needed hypothetically $40,000 to live on today, but 30 years from now, that $40,000 is going to be a far different number because of inflation. So I like to use an inflation-adjusted rate of return. But historically, a stock bond portfolio that is 70% equities, 30% bonds, for example, over, you know, the last 100 years or so, has returned approximately 9%. And let's say inflation is approximately 3%. You can back of the envelope, now it's not exact, but I won't get into the details, but back of the envelope, you could say a 6% real rate of return or 6% inflation adjusted rate of return in your calculation would give you an approximation of what that would be in today dollars. So if you're going to figure out, I have X number of dollars today, I'm 30 years old, and I won't touch this money until I'm 65, your time frame would be 35 years. You might use 6% or even 5% to be more conservative as the rate of return. You'll put the starting amount in. You could put in that you're going to add $0 and per year and see what it is. Or you could put in, I am going to add X number of dollars per year because maybe you're going to max out your Roth IRA every year. So that would be $7,000 in 2024 dollars, for example. And just see what that number is. So that's kind of the gist on how you calculate your Coastfi number. You can see more on their blog post about how to calculate it, but that's the gist of it, and I'll include the calculator in the show notes. And so I want to continue because that's Coastfi, and now SloFi, and this is their definition of SloFi. SloFi is not a specific amount of money or financial strategy. It's a philosophy that focuses on using the financial freedom that you gain along the path to FI to design a life you truly love. Like slow living and slow food, SloFi focuses on intentionality. SloFi adherents are intentional with their money, but they focus on using their money and time to live a better life that's aligned with their values. They do this without sacrificing their long-term financial stability. So I like to think of that as you're just not in a rush to get to the finish line. Your goal is to reach financial independence at some point, but you are taking the slower path, kind of like we talked about the three brothers in Jordan Grumman's book, Taking Stock, the youngest brother who takes the slow path and enjoys the journey. In that book, the younger brother may not even get to financial independence because they just enjoy the journey. They are basically working at a career they love. So maybe it's more the middle brother who takes the slower path. So I would guess SloFi is more like the middle brother in the book, Taking Stock. And I'll link to that in the show notes as well. So I like this idea of not trying to get to financial independence as fast as possible, and maybe taking a Coastfi approach or SloFi approach. Some people will also talk about Baristafi, which we talked a little bit about as well in the live podcast episode last week. But Baristafi is basically, you could be Coastfi or you could be taking SlowFi route. But Baristafi is you're working in a job that's maybe not taxing, that, you know, it could be at a Costco or a Trader Joe's or Starbucks, which is kind of where the term started from, where you're taking a job that is not stressful, but it's giving you certainly some income that you may not be able to totally live on. So you may still need some financial independence assets to draw from. And I think that's kind of where Baristafi falls into that middle category, where you may be using some of your financial independence money to supplement that lifestyle, but you're getting some income and you're also likely getting some benefits like healthcare, for example, which is a big one. I mentioned living a life of balance during this financial liberation phase. And I think the other conversations that tend to crop up when we're talking about this period of time is not depriving yourself of everything, but spending more on what you value. So kind of value-based spending. So it's not saying, well, we're going to eat rice and beans. We're not going to do anything. We're not going to go out. We're going to live in our car or just keep our housing to zero. Maybe we won't even have a car. We're going to walk everywhere, take public transit, which is a fine method of transportation, by the way. But instead of living that life of deprivation where you literally cut everything out, you start thinking of your spending in the terms of what is really important to me and what do I want to add into my life that brings me value and spend on that, but eliminate the things that are not as important. Ramit Sethi from the podcast, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, and the Netflix show talks about spending lavishly on things that are important to you and being ruthless on everything else. And I kind of like that approach of really thinking about what you're spending your money on, making sure it's things that are important to you. And then, yeah, sure, optimize the other things. Maybe cut things out that just don't bring you any joy, for example. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's kind of along the lines of the, you know, we talked about the credit card optimization in a prior episode. Some people will say, why do you spend so much time on that? Well, that's one area where it's fun in some ways to kind of optimize credit card points and so forth. But it's also an area where you can say, I really value the things that I can use these points for, but if I don't have to pay for them and I can optimize it, why wouldn't I do that? So that's a way of actually having value-based spending that may not even cost you much because you're using points, for example. But that's an example of spending lavishly on things that you enjoy, but keeping the cost low. And that might be simply flying first class with points instead of buying a first-class ticket. You may never buy that first-class ticket, but you're more than happy to fly first class if you can do it on points, for example. But I do think this middle phase is where you start to really think about how you spend your money, spending it on things that are important, avoiding the things that are not important, and continuing your path to financial independence. This brings us to the final phase, and that is phase three, financial independence. So what is financial independence? Well, there was an article in the Journal of Financial Planning in October of 1994 entitled Determining Withdrawal Rates Using Historical Data, written by Bill Bangen. And it was very influential. And that article became dubbed the 4% rule. In many cases, people call it now the 4% guideline. The gist of the article was this. He wanted to find out what was the highest rate, withdrawal rate, that you could take from a portfolio and it would last a normal retirement period of approximately 30 years, given that it was invested in a mix of stocks and bonds. By looking at historical data, he was able to determine that a withdrawal rate of 4.2% would allow that portfolio to last for the 30-year time frame without running out of money. It was picked up by newspapers and so forth and just kind of truncated to the 4% rule. And that's a guideline that many retirement planners have used for a long time, really, since that article came out. There's been numerous studies since then showing that that makes sense. There's been others more recently in the FIRE community, like Big Earn from Early Retirement Now, who has looked at different portfolios and different timelines, because people that retire early may have a longer than 30-year time frame. And in his work, he's come up with an even safer withdrawal rate of 3.25% given a longer time frame and different statistics based on, you know, historical data and so forth. So let's just call it somewhere between 3 and 4% is a safe withdrawal rate for a portfolio to last without running out. And I will link to the 4% rule definition in the show notes so you can read more about it if you choose. So that brings us to different kind of flavors of financial independence. So then people started talking about, and this is in the FIRE community, things like lean FI and fat FI and then just regular FI. So let me talk a little bit about what those are, because you'll hear people, you'll see sensational articles sometimes where so-and-so retired at age 30 with a very small amount of money and they say they're financially independent. Well, it all depends on how much you're going to live on, right? And so for easy math, let's just look at a $1 million portfolio, for example. 4% of $1 million is $40,000. So what that would suggest is that if you have $1 million, you could withdraw $40,000 in year one. And then in year two, you would look at what inflation was for the past year, usually using the consumer price index, for example. And let's say it was 2%. And then your withdrawal in the next year would be $40,800, so 2% more than $40,000. And you would just move forward from there. And the idea is that this portfolio should last for 30 years, given that withdrawal rate, even if you had what's called a bad sequence of returns, meaning that you retired into a bad market sequence and the account went down as a result of declines in equities, for example, or bonds, or a combination of both. But the recovery period and the fact that you're withdrawing 4% or less potentially, the portfolio should last for 30 years, provided that history kind of repeats itself, which of course is not a given. So that's how the 4% rule works. And lean FI is usually referred to as the $1 million or under portfolio. So if you could live on $20,000 a year, you would only need $500,000, for example. Now, that sounds great in theory, but someone who's 30 who says they can live on $20,000 a year, I think is not accounting for how their life might change going forward. So I'm not a huge fan of lean FI, for example, but that's pretty much what lean FI is. Now, fat FI is on the other end of the spectrum. Usually it's referred to as someone who would like to live on $100,000 or more. So using that same 4% guideline, that would mean you would need a portfolio of $2.5 million to be able to live on a starting amount of $100,000 in year one, adjusted for inflation going forward. It's kind of the general definition of fat FI. Now, let's look at the average American household expenses. So in 2022, the Consumer Expenditure Survey by the Bureau of Labor Statistics said that the average American household spent $72,000 a year, or $6,000 a month. So what does that equate to? Well, we can ask ourselves, $72,000 is 4% of what? Or if you want to invert that, it's also kind of 25 times, right? Because 1 divided by 4% is 25 times. So it's also 25 times 72,000 is 1.8 million, which is the same as saying 4% of 1.8 million is 72,000 a year. So the average household if they wanted to cover their $72,000 annual expenses, using the 4% rule or guideline, would need a portfolio of $1.8 million. Now, what that does not take into account is Social Security or any pension. And the FIRE community, in many cases, ignores Social Security and pension. I disagree with that approach because I think everyone will have some form of Social Security, probably not a pension, but Social Security. So that does reduce the need for, let's say, for the average American household, the $72,000, for example, because at some point Social Security will come into play. So that's something to consider as well. So you may not need the full $1.8 million in order to live your current lifestyle in retirement because of other forms of income. And I've talked about that on an episode I did with Catching Up to FI and I released on this podcast earlier. So you can look for that one and listen to that. So there's other ways to do this. In the financial independence phase, I like to think of work as optional. Because if you get to a point of financial independence where truly your portfolio can support your living expenses for the rest of your life, for example, you don't really need to work anymore, but you could. So I look at this time frame when you reach financial independence, and I think if you've designed your life well in, let's say, the latter stages of the financial liberation phase, your life probably isn't going to change that much other than you're just not going to work anymore, if you so choose. And maybe you choose to continue to work or in some capacity. And this is when passion projects could come into play, kind of like this. This is just a passion project for me. I don't make any money on this. This is just doing it for fun. And you could give back. I view this as a way of giving back, for instance. You could be an educator. I also view this as being an educator. I also do some financial literacy classes in our local high school, for example. You could become a mentor to others. You could also choose to help others that are less fortunate than you. Maybe you have excess money that you don't need the entire portfolio, and you could help others, whether it's financially or volunteering or just being a helping hand for somebody. This brings into mind the book Die with Zero. So that's a book that's kind of been popular recently. I read it. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. And it talks about once you get to a point of, let's say, enough or financial independence, now what? Well, how are you going to use those assets? And the idea with Die with Zero is using the assets you have for the rest of your life. But also, you want to make sure you don't run out of money, but making sure you utilize these resources that you've accumulated over your lifetime for your own good and the good of others around you. I feel like I've been living this lifestyle for the last few years, for sure, and that is creating memory dividends with friends and loved ones. I've been doing it through traveling with friends and going to new locations, but enjoying that with others. And I have a number of trips coming up as well to do the same. And the term memory dividends, I'm sure, was around before the book, but the book does talk a lot about memory dividends. And that the idea is that you're spending money on experiences with others that will create memories for you and them as well. And that creates its own form of return going forward because those memories create additional joy as you recall them in the future. And then the other idea is instead of kind of hoarding your assets and watching it grow and saying it needs to be bigger, 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 and then you get to a point later in life and hopefully you have no regrets, but you may very well have regrets because you didn't spend these resources you accumulated over your lifetime. And that is actually one of the things that is discussed in Jordan's book, Taking Stock, The Five Regrets of the Dying, which was coined by another author. I believe that's the title of a book as well. And if it is, I'll put it in the show notes. But the idea is that creating memory dividends during your life, but also instead of having these regrets at end of life, you could potentially do things during your life that would benefit others, whether it's lending a hand, helping people, volunteering, but also giving, instead of leaving an inheritance at death, giving during your lifetime and seeing that money go to work and potentially benefit those who you give it to even more than if you were to leave it to them much later in your life and obviously in their life as well, when it would potentially not be as beneficial to them. So kind of giving while alive instead of at death in the form of an inheritance can be beneficial to everybody. So those are the three phases of financial freedom that I could come up with. I kind of really like that middle phase of financial liberation, designing a life that is enjoyable to you on your route to financial independence. I think the finish line of financial independence is just icing on the cake. I think that middle phase, especially things like CoastFi, SlowFi, I just find it so intriguing. I'm glad that this community is gravitating toward that. And many people that were earlier in the financial independence movement, I guess you would say, that got to the finish line quickly, have subsequently realized that that was probably not the wisest decision on their part, and are also big voices in the community now to help people with the concept of maybe not rushing to that finish line so quickly and enjoying the ride. At future financial independence events, I would love to talk to anyone who would like to discuss this more. And I'd be curious to hear your approaches to this, potentially even in the form of an interview that we could publish on this podcast at some point. I will be at the Camp Fi Rocky Mountains, both week one and week two this year. So if you're there, I would love to have a conversation and talk about this further. So stay tuned for hopefully conversations from the community where we can share wisdom together. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. If you would like me to answer a question on the show, please send it to mark@marksmoneymind.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Let me know your first name, or let me know if you would like to remain anonymous, and also your state of residence if you choose. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next week on the Mark's Money Mind show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. And now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.